Ashley Eicher.
I'm Hunter Kelly.
And welcome to an all new episode of the All Our Favorite People podcast. Today we have our friend, hit songwriter and artist, Ryan Hurd. And I was just telling Hunter a few minutes ago, I was listening back through this morning and I love this conversation so much. I forget about some of the things we talk about until I go back and listen to it.
Yes. I mean, he's a fascinating dude because he has a worldview. Like, I've never heard a songwriter talk about like the importance of figuring out what you think about the world and what you believe in, like reading and educating yourself in songwriting, which is probably why he has a bunch of hits and they're creative and different, you know, than everything else you hear out there.
Well, and that you are supposed to continue to learn and expand your worldview by learning from other people and cultures and their experiences so that you can write better, not only be just a better human, but and write better songs.
Yes. So we're talking about his latest EP, EOM, and that takes its, that's the abbreviation for his latest single, Every Other Memory. So we talk about that and the video and this, the nostalgia that inspires that song. Plus, you know, he's got a baby boy, Hayes. He and his wife, Maren Morris, became parents in March, right?
Yeah, in March of this year. And so that was one of the things we talk about too, just how fatherhood has impacted him. And when you go into a pandemic and we've all been home, typically Ryan and Maren both are on the road all year. So one of the things he says is that he has been able to see his son every single day of his life.
Which is awesome.
Which is so awesome. And so it's so sweet just listening to Ryan talk about becoming a father and him and Maren finding balance and spending time with Hayes and just getting to be home in this time. You know, Ryan has also written multiple hits. He co-wrote What If I Never Get Over You, which was a number one hit for Lady A. He also wrote Heartless, which Diplo and Morgan Wallen have made a hit, and so many other songs. But there is a song on the end of his EP called Wish for the World that we talk about in this episode. And I love this song so much. And it really is the song that I feel like we need right now, especially in the political climate we are in and everything happening in the world. I just think it's so important.
Yeah. Well, and Ryan and Maren are both part of this group of country artists that I just love that are kind of breaking the cycle of fear in country music, that if you say anything, you'll be excommunicated from the format just because of what happened to the Chicks 17 years ago.
Yes. So here he is, Ryan Hurd. Ryan, it's great to see you. Thanks for I know we've had to reschedule a little bit, so thanks for being flexible with us.
I was happy to do it. I was looking forward to it, so I'm glad that it all ended up working out.
Yes, I'm just getting back to the land of the living. I had a little COVID action. Well, major COVID.
How did you feel?
Awful. It was awful. It was like having the flu with bronchitis on top of it. It was, it was not good. Like, that's the whole thing. I just want to tell everybody, it's awful. And, you know, like, seriously, enforced naps. Like, I had to nap. It wasn't an option. So, yeah. Everybody, that's keep wearing your masks.
Absolutely. Glad you're okay.
Thanks, ma'am.
Oh. It also made you a little cranky, but we're beyond that now. So, that's good.
Yes. Very irritable. Very irritable. Ashley got it on Monday. Thank you for seeing us through. I didn't cuss, though, did I?
No, I don't think you cussed.
No, I didn't cuss.
Your podcast. You can say whatever you want.
I know, we can.
We've had a couple of explicit warnings on this show, so it's okay.
We'll keep it PG-13 today.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Well, it's funny because I feel like, Ryan, it was just a matter of time before we would have you on the show. When you guys co-wrote and released All My Favorite People,
I remember seeing that you guys, like, I saw somebody post about your podcast and I was like, they spelled it wrong.
But it was so funny when you guys released that song, you and Maren, and she recorded that with Brothers Osborne. You and Maren wrote it with Mickey Reeves, but we had several people reach out to us and be like, did they write that song for y'all? And I was like, I wish they had.
Yeah. You can,
please let it fly. That was really fun. I got to know Maren writing songs. And we've continued to write after, you know, we've like gotten together and gotten married, and but it's really weird. I have never felt like I was a really like a much of a contributor to her project, because I mean, I write songs a certain way. And when we started writing, we were writing for pitch. So getting an opportunity to like, this is like the first time like writing for this third album that I feel like actually contributing to her project. Like I just, I don't know, something has clicked, and it's, even on Girl, I have a couple songs on that, I guess like three of them, but they sort of surprised me when they got on that project instead of like, you know, now I feel like every time we sit down, it's pretty just gotten, I think I've gotten to be a better co-writer. I've never really been a guy that writes with the artist. I've, all my success has been outside pitching songs. And so, yeah, that song, she's the one, she gets all the credit for that one. Just, making it like she had the vision for it and ended up wanting to have a feature on it and, ended up being a really cool, cool part of that project.
Well, and I love that you guys got to have your friends, Brothers Osborne, on that song too.
Yeah. And then when they were recording it, it was really special. It was, you know, obviously Busby produced that, and, having John Osborne and TJ in the studio kind of shaping it, and like watching John Osborne and Derek Wells play with each other is pretty, pretty special. You don't see Derek sitting back, much in the studio. He's generally the alpha, but, you know, knowing that John was the feature on it and watching him sort of just like lay back in the track was really cool. The whole thing was really such a special song, and I know there's still a lot of time left on that album before another one is ready to rock. So yeah, I can't wait to see what happens next with it.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that. You know, y'all got to know each other writing, and now you're married and both songwriters. And I think about, well, the ones that worked out. I was thinking of James Taylor and Carly Simon. But, you know, it's just kind of, there's this mythical thing about, like, you know, people on the outside looking in think about, oh, they're both songwriters and artists. Do they, like, you know, is their relationship worked out in songs? Like, is it kind of therapy a little bit, like, or just a way you communicate?
I think, no, the short answer.
Get deep.
It's hard to say, like, I mean, that's, it's not like we sit on the back deck and write songs every night. Cause I mean, to be honest, that's our job. So yeah. It's like, well, if you're an accountant, do you, and your wife's an accountant, do you go home and do accounting on the back porch? The answer is probably no. Obviously,
they're not doing taxes on the back porch is what
right,
you're saying.
Obviously a little
tax season.
But they probably talk about taxes. Right. And so that's the thing that we like. I mean, we talk about music all the time, and, you know, I think it's cool to have like very separate careers, but they're very connected at the same time. Like, but I try to like tell people that like our relationship is very similar to other people's. Like we, like people travel for work. Right. And everybody always asks like, how do you like have a marriage? And if you're always like constantly like touring and this and that, and you know, you figure it out. And, you know, I think about like, you know, tons of people travel for work and they have to have those conversations about like, when are we taking time off and when are we going to make sure that we're home and when are we going to, and you know, you sort of like build out your life and your career with that in mind. And you know, we have the same manager, which is really helpful because there's only one person, you know, with both calendars. And, you know, not only can she prioritize what we need to like continue making, like taking steps in the right direction, but she can also like prioritize our personal life. And it's not like a push and pull with another management company, or we have the same label. So that's helpful too, I guess. I mean, actually that has nothing to do with anything, but I mean, it's not like that's like helpful in our, with our calendar.
It could be for both releasing projects.
Yeah. But yeah, more on the management side, it's helpful with our marriage. Like the label world is so, I mean, it's just so competitive that you sort of, you know, make sure that you're, I mean, everybody's just like, kind of feels like scratching and clawing for whatever they can get once you're on an imprint, you know, and even if you're not, it's, that whole world is so much, I guess, more cutthroat than what we do on a day-to-day basis with like, you know, her project and my project and writing songs. And, but it is really important to just have the right team around you. And I guess this is the long answer to, no, we don't usually write songs on the back deck, but we have actually been like, because we've been, COVID means that I get a lot more co-writes with Maren because there's not a lot of people who are A, willing to go in person, or that you're comfortable going in person with.
Right.
And also Maren doesn't want to do like Zoom writes like this because they are soul sucking. And so for me, that means I get to like have a lot more days on the, so we will talk like song ideas. Like, well, what if we did this? What if we did this? And then you kind of take those the next day to do your, you know, take them to like your co-writer. And that's, so we've had some inspiration, that's for sure. But you know, I love that when you asked me the question, you were trying to think of a couple that had worked out and you couldn't. So,
well, I was thinking about, well, John and Yoko, because we watched the John Lennon, it's like the 40th anniversary of his death. So I've watched a lot of John Lennon stuff lately. So they worked out, but then it really didn't work out for Lennon. Yeah. So I didn't want to bring that up, but now I have.
I feel like being, you know, that term, people associate Yoko Ono with negativity, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I would hate to be that. So.
No one associates you with negativity.
I don't want to be Marin's Yoko Ono.
But I will say, too, like you guys having Hayes. Hayes was born when? March? Is that right?
March. Mm-hmm. Yeah, March 23rd. That was the thing. It was like you guys have not had to deal with touring with Hayes. So y'all,
having a young
y'all
baby.
You've had this little microcosm of baby world and being there, like being able to be present a lot more.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's like we are retired, but we have a newborn. This is the first week we've had to actually like juggle stuff, which is crazy. Usually we're just here. And like, so it's like, all right, you're working at the Ryman all week. What are we doing with this kid? Because I'm working too. And it's just the first week we've had to actually have like, okay, so he's going here and then here and then here. And then it's strangely normal. I guess that's how like normal people have to deal with their family and work life every day. But honestly, like we, looking back on this year, we were supposed to be gone. You know, I would have missed half the weekends, you know, and I've gotten to see my kid every day of his entire life. And that's been awesome. And we were looking back on it, like, I don't know how we would have done that. I don't think we would have survived in the same way. And just, I think that the, you know, I think everybody knows that Marin, we had like a C-section, which we don't make, it's not, I mean, it's obviously like people have those. It wasn't, I don't think anybody ever got into any massively serious situation. You just do that when it
is necessary,
as a necessary thing. But I think that if that didn't happen, the touring would have been something that we would have been able to wrap our head around. Mm-hmm. But because of that little complication, it took her. I mean, she, you know, they tell you, oh, it takes you 6 weeks to recover from this. And she's like, I'm going to do it in three. And it's like, yeah, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
And so there's no way she could have like recovered from that. And then 2 weeks later gone and done a massive tour. So it's then throw having a baby, like, I don't know, our kids, we've taken the bus with Hayes and he's, we can't sleep on it right now. Cause we're not used to it. It's just, you hit a bump and you're just awake and you go to the, you know, he's sleeping in a pack and play in the bathroom and you go see like, oh, he's passed out. He's fine.
So
he's going to be a good little road baby.
Well, and I can imagine too, you guys have gotten some, just, I mean, Connor kind of mentioned this, like the really sweet time that you guys have gotten together over the last 4 or 5 months that you wouldn't have had otherwise. And like you're saying, just getting to watch him and the way he's changing and probably his little personality coming out has got to be really sweet.
Oh yeah. It's cool because he's just a really, I don't know where he gets it from. It's not, he's not like either one of us. He's really content and easy and quiet. And there, I think the two of us are so just always grinding professionally. It's so hard and so focused that like having a kid that's just like laughing at a ball is really refreshing. And it kind of, you know, I've had so many moments that just, I just am so, it's just such a different thing for me to like live in that world. I love what I do. We both love our jobs. And I think so many people make the mistake of associating who they are with what they do. I mean, that's not anything that nobody's ever heard before.
Yeah.
But I think when you do this job specifically, because it's so public, for like public facing, and because, I don't know, it feels like you're supposed to share every little part of your life with everybody in order to be good at your job. Like, it's so cool to like have a, like, we don't really show too much of Hayes, and it's cool to have a private life, I think, for the first time.
Yeah.
And I've really like loved leaning into that. You know, and your record company wants you to do more stuff and put more shit on the internet. And you're like, yeah, like, what? There's no point, really, sometimes. Like, we could do more Instagram lives, but, like, people are sick of that. And we can do more, I don't know. Like, the only thing that I've really found that's effective is, like, using my own account to do stuff like that. And it's really cool to be able to, like, see 500 people, mm-hmm. like, listening to what you're saying when you're... But at the same time, I truly have, like, learned, I think Marin has too, to, like, back off a little bit. And yeah. and I think that's a good thing. I think that, like, sometimes there's no mystery left, right? Like, if you walked, I think a lot of times, and this is totally a choice that people make, and it's not a choice that, like, I have anything, like, there's not a wrong choice to make. But I think that sometimes if a lot of, like, the expectation is that, like, if you are an artist these days, that, like, if somebody walked into your house, they would already know everything about it. They would already know, like, where the cookies were, because there's not that wall anymore of, like, of any mystery. And I can guarantee you, if somebody came over to our house, they'd be like, I have never seen this before. That's, it's like half a conscious choice and half there's, like, nothing else to do because of the way the world is right now. But right. I've really enjoyed having, for the first time, like feeling like I'm not on stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's something really special and honestly, I think important for your family about some things remaining sacred.
Sure.
That are private to just you guys and not sharing with the world. And that's okay.
And I feel like I'm sounding kind of like a get off my lawn a little bit, but I don't mean it that way. I don't mean to, like, say that, like, you shouldn't share your life with your fans, or you shouldn't have, like that line is always cut and dry. Like, that line is blurred constantly, right?
Yeah. Between,
like, what's the world's and what is ours. And, you know, you have to remind yourself that when you sign up to do this, like, you are giving a lot of yourself to the world, and you are not all of you is yours anymore. And that's okay. And that's, like, part of it, but it's cool. I think my point is, it's cool to have just a part of our life that's, like, remained really just ours.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I also think it's something too, this year, I feel like we've all learned, because we've had forced to step back, like, that it's just not the most important thing to be posting on Instagram all day, every day. Like, I would rather be spending time, like, really good quality time with my people. Mm-hmm. And like we're not all running around to events like we used to do. And while I miss seeing people and I love what we get to be a part of and do, there's been something really special for me to just be with and get really quality time with my people and not stress about, oh, I need to go post this photo on Instagram, or I need to do this. Like,
do you miss the events?
I mean, it's funny you asked that, because I was listening to What If I Never Get Over You this morning, which was a number excellent one that song. You wrote.
Excellent.
Great song. The writers on that song were fabulous.
Really? I think there's only one word to describe it. It's brilliant.
Yes.
Oh, but you know, it's funny. I was thinking about that song because that was the last number one party I went to, was your all's number one party for that song, which was, you know, you and John Green and Laura Veltz and Sam Ellis and, you know, Hillary, Charles and Dave. And, like, we had no idea in February what we'd be walking into. And so I think I just kind of, as I was listening to it, I was like, that really was the last time I've seen a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I it's amazing how much stuff I don't miss.
Mm-hmm. Same.
It's amazing how much stuff I'm like, yeah, I don't miss that. I miss my bus. I miss music. I miss my people. But there's a lot of stuff you have to do to be an artist that I'm like, I don't miss that.
I just don't.
And I miss the creative part of this so much. And I miss, like, electric guitars. I know that sounds weird.
No, but everything's, like, so damn acoustic. And, you know,
the most boring instrument in the world. Sorry. It just is. And I'm tired of them. I just want to. I want to plug, I guess I could plug it in by myself, but you can't have electric guitars without drums. So it's sort of like, that was why, like, filming our music video was so fun, is, like, it felt like we were, it just felt real, you know, again. Yeah. But there's a lot of stuff. That number one party, now that you brought it up though, that was really the only number one party I've ever had. I know that sounds weird, but my first number one was Blake Shelton, Lonely Tonight. And it's funny because they did, like, a 5-song number one party.
Oh, yes. It was like a catapult.
Oh, yeah.
And it was at Losers. And it was, like, the only people that were allowed in there were, like, press and cameras, and it was so big because it was like Blake Shelton.
I remember that.
And it was, you know, so I made them like, they were like speakers, and I got to speak, and Brent Anderson got to speak because it was our first, both of our first number ones, and they didn't, I don't think they let anybody else really talk, but they were nice enough to let us talk. And they're like these speakers, and they were facing all these people. I didn't know, but like all my friends were in the parking lot. I remember like there's like 50 people there that like were all there like being really supportive, and I made them turn the speakers to the parking lot because I was like, these people up over here, they don't need to hear this. Like the press release is already written, like pointed out there. So that was cool. But yeah, that was, it didn't feel like, you know, you see all these number one parties and they're like, not that, that was fun because it was the first one, but it was, it felt, you know, there was five of them and there was just tons of, it was a crazy. And then the second number one I had was Sunrise, Sunburn, Sunset. And Luke Bryan has so many number ones that I don't think he does. I don't think we're doing number one parties anymore for Luke. And, but yeah, that was the first one that I got to like, really like say thank you to my publishers, and my parents were there, and it was just the one song, and like, kind of like the very Nashville way of doing it. It was, that was a really special day.
Well, and I just remember that it was so intimate. And I think for me, because I've been friends with Kelly and Dave for so long, like watching Dave get emotional
that was
in the middle of that speech was like, I ended up, for some reason, I just started recording when Dave started talking, probably because I was like, oh, I'll give this to Kelly at some point. So, and having that now, that moment where Dave just got really emotional was just like one of the sweetest things. So I just remember it being a really sweet, intimate day.
That one got me too, because for those listening, Dave was, well, they had a number one party for this song, and I don't think people, even I didn't realize, Dave got up and said, we haven't had a number one song in 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's so odd to like, A, realize how fast time moves in the music business. Like Lady A has been huge over the last 6 years still, right? It's not like they like dropped off, but like I wrote You Look Good, which was a top five song, but didn't go number one. Mm-hmm. And then they had a couple songs after that that were sort of similar as far as the charts. And then, you know, What If I Never Get Over You? You just don't realize how much time passes in between like actual number one songs sometimes. And to hear Dave say like, it's been 6 years and I brought my son here today because I didn't think that this would ever happen again. It hadn't happened. His son is five. And he's like, this hasn't happened in my son's lifetime. And just to see him, like how much it meant to him. I don't know. I think when you do this and you're a songwriter, it means a lot to you to have a number one song, but to see it mean just as much to the artist that didn't write it was like, that was powerful to me. And I just, you know, the thing about music is like, it's really difficult to have success in any part of it. Like this is really competitive. And so when you have it, you have to soak it up, and to see it, you know, to see somebody else who's had, they've won every Grammy, they've won every, you know, trophy you can win in country music. And to have this one song mean that much was not just to us, but to them. It was a really powerful day.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Every Other Memory though. You did the video. So tell me about the video shoot. Like what did y'all do as far as like getting in there? I love the GarageBand feel, but I also want to note that Rolling Stone described it as luxurious. Every Other Memory.
Hey, I appreciated that.
so far today, we've got brilliant and luxurious. Yes.
I love the video. They built that garage. So that's on a set.
Okay.
That we built out. And that was my favorite part was, you know, you get all these treatments. And every time you want to do a video, like people submit their ideas and you kind of go through them and see what you like. And you look at the mood board. And we had some of those and they're always good, but I kind of had I just told Nikki, who works in our management office, who does like all of our creative stuff. It's like, I just see it kind of like this. And I said the GarageBand thing and she ran with it and she did an awesome job. And the thing that's special about Every Other Memory is like every single line is a picture. So it doesn't have to be like a contiguous story for the listener, right? You can pick out one of those lines and it can put a picture in your mind of where you were one time. And I think that's why the song works and reacts with people. And so just having such a visual video, like the nostalgia of it, which we do nostalgia better than any other format of music, right?
That's absolutely.
country music, we do pictures, we do songwriting, we do nostalgia, like better than anybody else. So I just wanted it to feel like I was 16 years old playing in my first rock band again. And I feel like we did that.
Is that how you started, was playing in a rock band when you were 16?
Kind of. I mean, me and my producer and buddy, Aaron S. Heiss, grew up together, and we started playing and writing songs together. And when we got out of high school, we moved to Nashville, and he went and did production stuff at Belmont, and I didn't. But then as soon as we got, you know, out of school, we started writing songs and trying to like get our foot in the door and music grow. So that's the short version. But yeah, I've been working with Aaron since I was like 16 or 14 or whenever it was.
I do want to ask about your time at college, because I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated by the fact that you majored in sociology, because I think part, you know, a lot of what you do as a songwriter is talk about the human condition. And so I want to know, like, why, how did you decide on that major? What
you are the first person to ever say you're fascinated by my sociology degree.
I remember, I went to Belmont as well. And like one semester, yeah, I had sociology, and I took another class that same semester called postmodernism in philosophy, in literature.
Excellent courses.
Yeah. And so it really just opened my little Southern Baptist mind up to a whole new way of thinking. So the fact that it just seems luxurious to, I would love to go back now and major in sociology. So I just wanted to know like what it was like for you and why you gravitated towards that.
I need to be careful here. I think one of the best things you can do when you come to Nashville, and Brad Paisley actually came to Belmont my freshman year, and he was just talking about music, and he said this, he was like still working with Frank Rogers, and they actually got their start at Belmont, right? And he was like, the best thing you can do is come to Nashville and watch. Like, just take a second and see what is happening and where you fit. Mm-hmm. The people who flame out the fastest are the ones that come down here and they start singing on the quad day one, and
well, I did that.
They're waving their arms going like, I'm the artist, I'm an artist, I do music. It's like a lot of people, I think the ones that like figure it out are the ones that kind of go, all right, what's going on here, how does this all kind of work? And when I did that, I was like, everybody's doing this music thing here, but I took this class and I really enjoyed it, I'm just going to kind of see where this takes me. And I ended up really loving it, and it was really challenging. And I thought, I didn't really know, I wanted to go to grad school maybe. And I loved music, but I wasn't set on like, I'm going to do music for my entire life. Like, it's, for some reason, I just, you know, I saw a lot of people like trying to go through that program. And a lot of people that I still work with did, like, they got incredible internships, and they decided like, this is my calling. And I just took a longer route to it. Right. And I think the cool part about like what I did specifically is like, I talk about like songwriting, people ask about songwriting a lot, like how do you either get your foot in the door or whatever. And this is like a backwards answer, but I say all the time, I'm like, you have to focus on getting better, not on getting somewhere. And I think that's true with anything you do, because like, if all you're worried about is like the next, you know, step up the ladder instead of like being undeniably great,
yeah,
then you're not going to get better. You're not going to like, it doesn't matter who you co-write with. It doesn't matter if you're in the room with somebody who has a publishing deal or the biggest Ashley Gourley or Shane McAnally. Like, if you don't write a good song, then nobody's going to want to listen to it. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that is leading me to this point, which is, I think that songwriting is craft, mm-hmm, and it's perspective. Mm-hmm. And you can work on your craft, right? You can get better at writing songs, but developing a worldview is very different. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that your craft is pulling from constantly, right? And I think that's why we kind of get caught in country music with this cycle of saying the same thing over and over and over, is because like, sort of like recycling what works, but the most brilliant songs are the ones that we didn't see coming. Like, I would point to Cole Swindell's Breakup in the End. It's one of the best country songs that's ever been written. And it was the first number one for Jesse Joe Dillon, and like one of the first for Chase. And it's because Jesse Joe saw a book on a library shelf or a bookstore shelf So John dies in the end. And she said, that's a cool song idea, right? And if you're not developing your worldview and you're not looking for opportunities to increase the size of your content pool or whatever that is, I mean, it's going to be hard to get better. Like, so interesting. It's like a lot of people can write a, like, make a song sound cool, but it's about something that nobody cares about. Mm-hmm. And when you can, like, figure out how to write music and what to write about that's compelling, then you're unstoppable. And I feel like what I do, or what I did that really helped me stand out a little bit, was like, man, we read a ton of books in college on, we had to, and it just makes you look at the world just slightly in a little bit different way. And is that like a good idea for everybody? I would not recommend my path to anyone else. It's not the easiest way to like become a writer in Nashville, I'll tell you that, but it is, you know, it takes a lot of like being resourceful, and it takes a lot of, I guess, like trusting your own intuition and trusting your own interest, right? Like, I was interested in that, and I just kind of went with it and said, I don't know where this is going to take me. I did not do the graduate school thing. There was a couple of lonely years there getting my like feet underneath me as a writer, but you know what? Like, I'm really happy with, I guess, the way that it ended up. And I really did love my time learning something like that in college.
I think curiosity as well, I hear, you know, it's like, you know, as a creative person, you have to take in, you know, be open to new ideas and kind of exploring and staying open to that over time. Yeah. As you get busier and busier, you know, gets a little more challenging, I think. So do you have some kind of, I don't want to say system, but way that you're like, okay, I need to like take some new stuff in, or just kind of shake things up, you know, creatively?
That's a good question. I don't know. I feel like that's really hard. I feel like lately, like the smaller my circle gets, the better the songs are, the more consistent they are, I guess. So I'm in this spot now where not to say I've earned anything, but like I don't really need to write with every new writer, and I don't write as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. I think that like just knowing who, like having such a really strong rapport with your creative partners, mm-hmm. makes it so you don't have to shake it up so much. Yeah. I don't know. I you know what though? Like, there are moments, like I started working with Aaron, like I've worked with Aaron since we were kids, right, on music, but you know, I've started, like we pulled in my live guitar player Teddy on some production stuff, and it's really shaken up, like, mm-hmm. I think it's added just an incredible amount of creativity to what we do. And it's not something that Aaron does, and it's not something that I do, but it's not something that steps on our toes either. It's so complimentary. So, you know, I think like production wise, yeah, we had to, but just getting a little energy here and there is so fun. But as a writer, man, this job is about like being present in a way every day that gives you an opportunity to have a couple hits a year. And I look at writing songs as a blue, not, I hate saying it like this. It's not blue collar work where like you're showing up and you're like pouring a sidewalk. I don't want to like be disrespectful to people that are actually working hard. But I also think that like the writers that end up making this happen are the ones that can balance out like inspiration and working hard. I think that every single writer who starts off in Nashville, you want to do this job for a living, go write 200 songs in a year. That's what people do. I mean, Adam Dorley's going to write 300 this year, and he's got 50 number one songs, and he's not stopping. And I just think that like part of this is not, you know, it's discouraging to new people, right? They're like, what can I do to like make a go of this? And I say, I know it sounds like a lot, but you need to write 100 songs. And you sort of see like the life go out of their face. But it's not like, if you want to do this as a job, right? You want this to be your vocation. 100 songs is 2 songs a week for a year. Mm-hmm. Can you do 2 songs a week for a year? I mean, and I think that when you like kind of break it down like that, it's not as daunting, but mm-hmm. It is crazy, like, and I'm guilty of it too. People get so hung up on 1 song or 2 songs, and this is a great song. It's like, man, I'm sorry, but like 1 song, it better be, I Can Always Love You, because I will always love you. I'm sorry. That That's embarrassing. Sorry, Dolly.
I was thinking about Dolly as you're talking about this, because she has like 3,000 songs and is constantly writing, you know.
Exactly. And I think that's more of the job, is not to have one great song, is to be constantly producing, like having that output. And I feel like a lot of times, like, you want to set yourself apart from every other writer in Nashville, Tennessee, that's trying to get the exact same spot that you have, like, go to work. And I know it's weird to say, but like, I think songwriting is mostly about showing up and trying really hard for 4 hours. And like, some days it's great, and the more you do it, the better you get at it. And you make your medium ideas just a little bit better than medium. And when you have a great idea, you hammer it. Like, you know when it's a great idea, you know when it's special, and you only need one of those a year, you can do it forever, right? If you got one hit a year, I've been doing this 8 years. If I did it like that, I mean, I've kind of done that actually, maybe not all number ones, but like, that's kind of, you get to do it again for a couple more every time you hit it. And so I love being a writer. I love just talking about the rhythm of it. It's such an odd job, right? Mm-hmm. It's not normal. And so like, people have so many questions about it. And I don't know, even as we're talking, my computer's going nuts, because somebody dropped off of our write, and they're trying to find like a third and this and that. I'm like, whatever, maybe we'll do this today, maybe we won't, but we're gonna show up and try.
Thank you guys so much for listening to the All Our Favorite People podcast. If you like what you hear, go check out the All Our Favorite People community on Patreon. That's patreon.com/allourfavoritepeople. And for as little as $3 a month, you can help us keep the podcast growing as we add live shows and events.
We're also offering you exclusive access into planning episodes, as well as off-the-cuff interactive bonus content that we just can't fit into the show. You'll find out who's coming on the show first and possibly get a shout out on the podcast.
I don't know why I wanted to laugh at you just then. Check it out on Patreon. That's patreon.com/allourfavoritepeople. Well, but that's one of the things I love about listening to the EP EOM is that, you know, for a song like What If I Never Get Over You or Heartless, that has been made a hit by Diplo and Morgan Wallen, like, hearing you as the songwriter sing these songs, I mean, it's one of the things I loved about when I interned in publishing was listening to the writers. It was one of the things I love about going to the Bluebird is hearing the writers sing the songs. And it just kind of takes on a whole different feel from what it is than what we hear on the radio.
I love that project because I've always wanted to do it, but there was never like a time, like the timing would always be weird, right? And labels are pretty weird about, you know, releasing songs, and they're weird about releasing basically covers.
But
it was so cool to do like this B-sides and alternate versions. And like, actually Teddy, my producer and guitar player now, and Aaron did the first three tracks on that. Right. So Aaron did the whole thing, but Teddy did a couple, like he did the Every Other Memory acoustic, which is not even, it's not acoustic. It's awesome. But
I know, it's so great. I was like, wait a second.
I was like, we can call that acoustic, I don't care. And then he did False God, and he did Heartless, my version of Heartless that we call acoustic, but it's not. It's just not Diplo, right? But man, what a fun thing I got to be, I got to be a part of those songs. What a fun thing to get to like have my voice on them. And, you know, it just honestly, it helps our live show quite a bit to like have that out. And then nobody's surprised when they come to the show, like, oh, he's playing this Diplo song. Why? That's cool. Cool cover. It's like, no, it's not a cover.
Song.
Right. It makes a little bit more sense now for people to be like, oh, okay, I got it. So, except for the Taylor song, people ask me if I wrote that song, and it's really sad that I didn't. But
I did want to ask about Taylor. Is, you know, having interviewed her since she was like a teenager, and now she's like this song, False God, is, watch her level of songwriting over the years is just mind boggling to me. So I wanted to ask you why that song, and also as a songwriter, you know, how you feel about Taylor Swift at this point.
Taylor Swift is probably the best songwriter that we've ever had in Nashville. And you don't even realize it until I covered Dress in 2019 in my live set. And I covered False God this year before we had to shut it all down. And you don't even realize how good the songs are until you're singing them with a band. And like, she did that thing in Dress where she's doing the haws. Mm-hmm. And you realize that like, oh, That's just her like breathing. She's getting a breath before the chorus. It's brilliant. Like you realize like, oh, I have to do it. Like if I do it like this, she wrote her like live breath into this banger of a song. I don't know. I was impressed learning both of those tunes, like how just the more you dive into it, the more you realize how smart she is. And, you know, I don't know how I got into like, I think just you're always looking for like an interesting cover. Like you don't want to do something that's like everybody expects. And you also don't want to do something that's like totally lame. You don't want to do something that's too obvious. So like I kind of started realizing like we've met Taylor and she's been really, really, really supportive and nice to Maren and nice to me and just an incredible human. I just kind of clicked one day, like everyone in my crowd is a Taylor Swift fan. Everyone in Maren's crowd, like you have that like Taylor Swift fans in every single audience. Mm-hmm. And it's fun sometimes to do like a 10% song where like only 10% of the people in the crowd know it. But when you do it, like I did Bacon, that Nick Jonas song one year, and it was so dirty. It was so dirty. And like 90% of the people looked at me like, what is this? What's this guy sing about? But then 10% of the people, their faces are like, they just light up. And they're like, oh my God, this is awesome. And I realized maybe we should shoot for more than 10% of the audience. which is the Taylor covers. I've just really enjoyed diving into her songwriting. The more you kind of live inside of it, the better it gets poetically.
And I just think about, sorry, Brian, I cut you off.
That's enough.
Well, but even as we're talking about Taylor and we just talked about Dolly and songs that like Dolly wrote by herself, like I Will Always, Always Love You or Jolene, and songs I think of like Taylor has written by herself, like Better Man. She really is just an incredible songwriter in and on her own. Like to think about being able to write a song like that by yourself.
Oh,
it's pretty incredible.
Well, there's no need anymore, right? Like there's no need to write songs. Like I don't write songs by myself anymore. It's too, I don't know, lonely. She could, she has every single song, like the greatest songwriters in the world all want to write for her record. So the fact that she can just do it by herself is even more impressive.
Well, I just also want to say that, you know, looking back at country music history, I'm always looking at weird stuff. So I was recently looking at all the Dolly Parton songs that Merle Haggard covered over the years. And he was like obsessed with, you know, Merle Haggard's also one of the greatest songwriters of all time. But he like him actually going and like covering all these Dolly Parton songs because he loved them. I just see such a similarity to what you're doing with Taylor. And it is like, you know, you write songs yourself that are hits and you have your own thing. So for you to actually go and cover her is like, it's also a, you know, that mm-hmm. that sign of like, I really respect you. And I love you doing that because I just love when male artists perform songs written by women. I just think it's awesome.
I feel like I've tried really hard to be only respectful about her music. I don't really want to be viewed as someone who's like a clout chaser or, mm-hmm. you know, I don't expect anything from, I just, you know, enjoy that. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's cool that like covering her songs, I don't really need to change any pronouns to make it work, mm-hmm. which is right. Crazy. And, you know, not that I think that you should either. Like, I don't know. It's an odd thing trying to like, it's not odd. It's just cool to be able to take a song and sing it as it is and it totally worked and have it just, you know, it's a guy singing it instead of a girl, but it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like that stuff's so archaic anyway that like, that was a really cool treat and, you know, getting, you know, she came out of retirement to tweet about it. So that was cool. And not off hiatus to say something about my tune or her tune that I sang. That was really nice of her.
That's awesome.
Well, you know, Ryan, it's like one of the things I think I appreciate most about you and Maren, especially recently, is watching how honest you both are on social media about the state of the world and what you feel and what's good and what's bad, but or what's right and what's wrong, and really trying to love people well. And I think that was one of the things I really thought about when I was listening to Wish for the World. I'm like, this is the song that we need.
Oh, thank you.
Right now.
I love that song. I end my shows with it. And, you know, that's like one of those that you have in that title in your phone. You're like, this is probably not a title that will be a massive hit. And that's not true. To me, it's a huge hit. We close the show with it. It's really special. I love that people leave on that note. And yeah, I'm really proud of Maren for using her platform the way she does. I don't feel like I have as much of a platform to burn down, if that makes sense.
And I might be thinking like when I'm seeing you stand up for her, which
I love seeing. She doesn't need my help, but sometimes it's nice to know that she needs to know that I'm watching, you know, paying attention. Yeah. But man, I had somebody last night, it just drove me nuts. It was like three levels of like, I can't believe it. That's what you think. I post a photo. I don't put any photos of Hayes on my anywhere, but I back of his head at the Ryman. We were the only two people in the room watching Maren play, and people were going to comment and whatever. And the first comment is this lady who says, I can't believe that you're from Michigan and you caved to your wife's Democratic views.
What?
And I was just thinking of like the three levels of not like, I can't believe that's like, I'm from Michigan.
She's from Texas.
Right. Hey, do you think that I would be with someone that I disagreed with on stuff like that? It generally doesn't happen. Sometimes it does. Like, I'm not caving. We just happen to have a similar world to you, and that's why we're together. The fact that, yeah. And then I was like, Michigan is like generally a Democratic state. Like, that to me blows my mind. Like, well, what do you mean? Like, Michigan's been blue since like 76 or something, and then turned red again this like last election, and it'll probably go. But like, you know, the hard part about like the political stuff is like people do take it so personally. And you know, I'm really proud of the way that Maren uses her platform, because you can 100% lose fans if they see you as the enemy in that way. And I wish that people could listen to music without associating what they're listening to. I mean, like, it's hard, because like you want to be an artist for everybody, but the fact is you can't be. And I think what Maren figured out that other artists in country music either don't give a shit to figure out, or don't care to do, or are too scared to, or somebody like me who doesn't really have enough of a platform to really like hammer home what you like, use it in that way. Like, what she figured out is like, listen, I would rather cultivate a fan base that loves me for my music and sort of, you know, put it all out there, so that if it's a problem for you that I don't believe the exact same thing that you, if my music is not completely reinforcing your worldview, and if that means that you can't listen to me anymore, she's fine with that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because every time somebody says like unfollowing, or I disagree with your politics, or I disagree with what you believe about, for every person that does that, five more people who agree with her
become, like, thank you for saying it.
That's the thing that people don't understand. And people are so scared of radio. Radios, they play what they want to play. Like, the Dixie Chicks thing happened so long ago, and it was so specific, and it was so weird and messed up. And it just, the world is so much different now. There's not as much to be scared of, if that makes sense, on that level. Yeah. The problem, like, I think it's weirder that like there's a lot of these artists. I talked about having privacy. There's a difference between like having your privacy and also just not addressing anything other than music with your fan. Like, I think it is, you do owe the people that listen to you a little bit of your own heart in that way, where it's like, this is what I am. It is scary to say, it's scary to say you like Trump. It's scary to say you don't. Having an opinion is the scariest part of this thing. And like, you know, not everybody likes Ryan Hurd, the artist. There's plenty of people that on the internet that tell me that every day. That's fine. What I'm trying to say is like the way that Maren has put herself out there, and then me by association, like, I'm really happy for the people that either don't agree with us and stay fans because they love the music, which is how it should be.
Right.
And I'm also very thankful for the people that see what she stands for and what I stand for, and it makes them want to listen to the music more. Like, both of those things are okay, and they should be the norm. And I wish Republicans go see Bruce Springsteen. Just saying. That guy doesn't believe anything that has anything to do with that side of stuff. But Republicans still go see Bruce Springsteen. And if that's the case, then they can come see Maren Morris too. Just a thought.
Well, no, I want to say that the last time I saw you, Ryan, in person, I didn't realize I was seeing you, because y'all actually parked behind us going to the Black Lives Matter rally in Germantown like months ago. It was only after the fact somebody said, hey, that was Ryan and Maren. I was like, oh, I didn't recognize y'all because of the masks. But
I love the masks.
I know. It was
my favorite.
I was like, I know. I saw y'all and I was like, oh, they look like cool people. And then later it was like, hey, that was Ryan and Maren. I was like, oh, well, I would have said, hey.
Where were we?
We were in Germantown. So like walking over to Bicentennial Mall. So y'all parked right behind us, and it was so that, but it was great to see y'all there.
Oh, we were getting Rolf and Daughters to go.
No, we're not.
I think so.
you wouldn't have parked there. I know Germantown. I used to live there.
What was I doing? I wonder what I was doing. Was it protest day?
It was protest day. We went in March.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah. That was awesome.
That was awesome. But, you know, I think seeing y'all and also seeing Brothers Osborne and Cam, who we've had on, and then Casey Musgraves as well, for me, you know, just having come into country music in 2005, right, when, like, it was the peak of, if you say anything, you're over, you know, because the Dixie Chicks, yeah, it just happened. Right. And so, you know, as time's gone on, I'm so glad to see you and Maren, like, actually talking and being the people who were like, your careers not going away. You know, it's like it's great to see this generation actually speaking up and then not, you know, like, okay, yeah, it didn't happen. It's not, you know, that is not something. I just feel like that threat that I've seen on social media for so long, when anybody gets out of line, like, oh, you know what, you're gonna be Dixie Chick.
Right.
Yeah, it's just great to see that not be, you know, held over country music's head.
I will say this, though. I do think we have a problem in our genre where we have a lot of people who, I'm not being specific here, I just think that there's like this sentiment where, I think it came out of the bro country stuff, where it's like, there's this, I think it's like a Northeast sentiment talking about like all these truck songs and all this other stuff and like things we do in our genre that like seem to be pandering, mm-hmm, but in reality are not. And I think the one thing that we've lost is like this ability to realize, like, if you don't like an FGL song because it talks about trucks and drinking beer, then you haven't been to Iowa in the last 5 years.
Right.
Like, I do think that we do this thing where we're trying to tell country fans what they're supposed to like and what they're not supposed to like. And like, I do think that what we do, even in like down the middle country music, like radio land, the reason that we talk about trucks and fires and beer is because like that is literally art imitating life. That's the whole point of it. And for people between the coasts, that is a huge, that's a life that we are, yeah, directly reflecting that. And I think sometimes we do lose that. So, you know, I don't want to be like the liberal guy who's like, you know, like I 100% love working in country music, and I completely love country music fans, and I deer hunt, and I have a truck, and I drink a lot of beer, too much beer. but I, you know, I love this genre. I think this is the greatest song town in the world. But I do think that it's kind of cool right now to be able to work in country music and have diversity of thought. That's been the first, like, this is the first time I think in a really long time that it's kind of existed, and it feels good.
Yeah.
Well, I 100% agree. Well, it goes back to like, there's room for all of us and our varying schools of thought, as long as hate is not being spewed at someone else because they think differently than you do. I think someone called me dumb. They said to me the other night, they're like, well, of course you and all your dumb celebrity friends would believe that. I was like, I've been sitting here listening to you and being very respectful. Like, I don't know why you had to go there. Like, we can have a conversation that we disagree, but you don't have to call me dumb or be hateful. That's ridiculous.
I had internet anonymity, you know?
Right.
Yeah. It's a whole situation, that internet.
That means, yeah, that really hurts my feelings coming from an egg on Twitter. You bot, go away.
Bots.
The meanest people have 2 followers and they're from Russia. So.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth?
I love banning and blocking people.
You're not real.
It's so
fun.
I got a real serious question. It's not really serious. I want to talk about you and style, because you just put out some photos in cheetah pants.
Oh yeah.
Which was really
that's like the height of masculinity, I believe, is being able to be confident in yourself enough to wear cheetah pants.
I mean, that's what I thought when I saw it. It's just so funny because I was reading the Vulcan article. And I mean, first of all, John Scheer is so talented. I know that shot those photos. And Krista Roser, who's your stylist, who's a mutual friend of ours. And I was like, I love that they got you in cheetah pants.
I mean, I think when Versace sends you cheetah pants, you put them on. That's the that's a rule that I live by. I don't know. I've loved like getting to live in that world a little bit. I don't know. Krista's always trying to get me to go to like Milan for fashion week. It's truly not interested in that, going that deep into it. But, you know, it's part of the job to, you know, look the part. And the more that like I've worked with her and got an opportunity to like be in country music, it's just sort of a natural extension of what we do. And yeah, I've enjoyed kind of cultivating my own style. And it's, I like, you know, it's been nice to not have to.
Like, seriously.
Yeah, it's cool. It's just, there's so many cool parts about this. And you know, they're my favorite thing to tell my manager when she asked me if I want to like look into an opportunity is like, I am open to it. That is like the greatest thing ever. It's like, go like, so like, that's the thing with fashion. It's like, I love getting the opportunity to like, you know, just try stuff. And I've got,
try something new.
I got in GQ. That was cool. That was like a pretty cool notch on the belt, was to like, I've been in it twice actually. Dang. The first time was a top 10 best dressed of the week, and that was cool. And I was CMT awards last year. Very cool. And then I
also frame that article and put it on the wall.
It's digital only.
Oh,
but yeah, but I still counts.
And still counts.
I was one of the grooming gods of the week, where they took a photo of me at a show. And like my hair is tucked back and I'm super sweaty and my beard is like nasty. And they're like, basically like, hey, maybe don't comb your hair every day. Like Ryan Hurd. And I'm like, I don't know how to take that. Like, yeah. This seems like a very backhanded compliment. I'm not dirty, I swear. It's just a rock show. So
it's just a little rock and roll, people. Like, yeah. Come on.
I'm out of shampoo right now for like 3 days. And I thought, well, it's Ryan Hurd. I'll be great, you know, a little dirty.
I haven't showered today, obviously. But that doesn't mean that I don't do it, as this article implies.
You should totally go to Milan, though. I think that'd be, I mean, come on.
Oh, I'm here for that.
Man, that's a long way to go.
I would go, honestly, I would take a trip anywhere.
Have you ever been to a fashion show? Nothing's free. Zero. Yeah.
Yes.
Fashion shows are, you think they're super glamorous, and you literally sit there, and then in 10 minutes, they walk all the clothes past, and then everybody gets up and leaves.
Yeah.
It's over. And then you're like, what happened?
Yeah.
It's a big to-do.
I was really hungover when I went. I went to Christian Siriano's show. And,
that would be fun. But you're sort of like, that was it? It's done?
It's done, yeah. Real quick.
Cool. Yeah, I love the opportunities I get to do within the sphere of country music. That's kind of what I've told them. It's like, I will do this as long as it sort of is complementing what I'm doing as a writer and an artist, because I'm not an actor and I'm not a model. I don't want to do that. I want to write songs. And so that's kind of the balance we've struck with that. But I do love, it is pretty cool when like Dolce & Gabbana sends you a tux to wear. That's fun.
Well, I mean, it's part of our history too. I mean, I remember.
They make you send it back. I don't know why.
One time I went with one owner to something, and it was in the summer, and I wore shorts, and she said, next time I see you, I need an outfit, Hunter. You need to wear an outfit, you know? So it's like, it really is. It's like showing up in country music. Think about Porter Wagoner.
Oh,
the suits, even Dwight Yoakam, style, fashion. Man, don't be afraid.
We could do a podcast on just Dwight Yoakam's stories, third hand stories about Dwight. That's a,
we that, absolutely could.
There's your hour.
Oh, man. Awesome. Ryan, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. Hunter, do you have anything else?
Well, I have a whole section of questions from Andrew Cohen I didn't even get to.
Oh.
So we'll have to have you back on, because these are evergreens. About Google Us, your cover band.
You know, I'd love to come back on. You know, Andrew would love to come on too as a guest. It's his dream to be asked to be on a podcast. So
we could have you two together. Yeah, that could get entertaining.
Together, because yeah, he has a whole line of questioning about who you are as a Friends character, and about your new man cave, which you would.
I'm 100% Ross.
Yeah, he said. Are you and Maren Ross and Rachel?
I'm Ross. I don't know if she'd want to be, I don't know who she would say she is, but just the indecision, the height, it's all me.
Yeah, the height. You're a very tall person.
Pivot!
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 Still one of the best episodes ever in the television. Enduring,
listen, we have two couch. Hallmark has the couch ornament, the Friends couch ornament this year. And my mom got one for my boyfriend, Clint. And then I bought one as well. And not knowing that she'd already bought one. So we have two couch ornaments. So Hallmark
I'll buy one from you.
Hallmark is, well, no, I think we're going to be able to get usage of them because it works as an everyday kind of decoration, you know, because it's not overly Christmassy. So you just, you know, have the Friends couch. Anyway, Hallmark is not a sponsor, but we would love them to be.
Well, thank you guys for having me today.
Thanks.
If it's not too much, I'd love to do it again sometime, but I don't want to bore your audience. But we can cover, you know, Dwight Yoakam third hand stories.
Oh yeah. No, there's so much more to talk about.
Friends episodes. I'm a big Seinfeld guy, and I do think that there's a, you know, real life Seinfeld moments are
absolutely.
So yeah. And Ted Lasso, did you guys watch Ted Lasso yet?
I need to.
Not yet. Oh. That's on my list. I haven't watched it yet.
Weepy.
Really?
Just tears of happiness the entire time.
I went back and watched Stranger Things season 3. I missed it. I don't know why.
Did it make you happy?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, the 80s, yeah. 80s mall, 80, good. You know, 1980s mall kind of thing. Love
heck
it.
Yeah.
I just rewatched Schitt's Creek, but no one's surprised by that as much as I talk about that show. So,
Eugene Levy.
The best.
National treasure.
National treasure. International treasure between Canada and the U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really did you know, he reinvented himself between American Pie and Schitt's Creek. So,
well, Waiting for Guffman. You've seen Waiting for Guffman, right?
While playing the same character, he somehow reinvented himself.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Thank you guys.
Ryan, thanks. Thank you. We'll see you soon.
Rock absolutely. On. You guys.
I mean, I think it's really impressive that he's been in GQ now twice.
Twice. I mean, that's, and even though it's only digital, I mean, you can print that out. I just printed out Beyonce's British Vogue piece that came out like this weekend, just, you know, to have a tangible copy. So, I mean, it works.
Are you going to frame it and put it on the wall?
No, I just wanted to actually like interact. You know, I figured, here's the thing. I am really sparing with my color ink just because it's like, you know, everything. I'm like, oh, I don't need color. I just black and white. But with this, I was like, you know what? I would like to see a printed version of Beyonce's outfits for British Vogue. So splurged and did that. So, you know, I think Ryan could, I mean, Ryan and Mary probably have a great printer, I imagine. And if we didn't talk about it, but we can next time, along with like, you know, Dwight Yoakam third hand stories, which.
Yeah, we already have an episode 2 planned at this point with Ryan. We have so much to talk about, but I'm sure they have a lot of color printer ink.
Yeah, I mean, you can have it delivered, although sometimes I really have to go to the store and get it because you can't always get it delivered.
Anyway, gosh.
That's neither here nor there. Thanks, Ryan, for coming on.
Oh, Ryan, we loved having you on the show and can't wait to have you back. You guys, make sure to go check out his EP, EOM. Obviously, we talked about a lot of songs. And make sure you go watch the music video for Every Other Memory.
Mm-hmm.
And follow him on social media. And you can find us on social media at All Our Favorite People. You can find me at Ashley Eicher. You can find Hunter at Nashville HK. We love you guys. You know, if you like, we'd love for you to subscribe.
Yeah.
Or rate and review.
Yeah, please. Thank you.
We love you guys and we'll see you soon.